Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Horror in the Court. On the docket today, it's People Eater against People Eater in the case of Feast v. Ravenous. Which is the worst way to go? Being eaten by a chupacabra-like monster designed to hunt man, or being hunted and eaten by man himself? Only Judge Darren Ewing is capable of making this determination, so please rise for the Honorable Judge Darren Ewing.
Everyone, please be seated. This is Judge Darren Ewing. Today on the docket, two films that involve eating. With Thanksgiving on the way, obviously eating is on everyone's mind. So the two films that we are going to bring to the court are the films Ravenous versus Feast. I leave it to you two defendants to give me the details about those two films. The case that's been brought before me is, which type of being eaten is worse? Is it worse to be eaten by a mutated chupacabra-type monster, or is it worse to be eaten by a cannibalistic man possessed by a Wendigo? And I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Both of these films are, I think, exemplary horror films, and definitely fall within the Thanksgiving theme. So without any further ado, the first defendant will be Scott, who will be defending the film Feast. Scott?
Thank you very much, Darren Ewing. Good day and a pleasant afternoon to both you and my peer in career only, Jeremiah Johnson. And a happy Thanksgiving to everyone in attendance for this hearing. On this food-centric family holiday, we have found that we have to ask ourselves a question. Which is the worst way to be eaten? By a bloodthirsty animalistic monster that looks like a monster, or one that looks like a man? Which stomach would you rather avoid? I am here to defend the 2005 movie Feast, winner of Project Greenlight's third season, an all-around bloodbath of epic proportions. The strange beasts of Feast are truly a horror conceived in the darkest recesses of our minds and birthed in our nightmares. Though never named and their background is unexplored, these beasts are a cross between a genetic experiment gone awry and the infamous chupacabra of North American lore. They are smart, fast, and hard to kill. Being eaten by one of these monsters is truly a fate worse than death. These vile creatures, to add insult to injury, will do you the dishonor of violating you sexually before eating you alive when given the chance. Compared to that, Jeremiah's cannibal sounds like Mr. Rogers. Yet still, Jeremiah will try to convince the court today that his movie Ravenous has the more horrifying people eater, a man possessed by a dark hunger for human flesh, a man possessed by a Wendigo, also of North American legend, a long outdated and forgotten legend at that. His man-eater, in modern culture, is a rarity wrapped inside another rarity. Being a period piece, it removes the viewer from the fear of its events unfolding in a modern way, a way that could directly happen to the viewer. When was the last time you heard about cannibals, I ask? Jeffrey Dahmer? Bath salts? Silence of the Lambs? When was that? Not today. Not here. My movie is set in the present day and speaks to a fear we can relate to, the fear of the unknown. Anyone could, in the course of their daily lives, be interrupted by the terror that is the unknown. These people in Feast, who inhabit the Bear Tavern and spend their night in terror, are you and me. They are people who don't expect their day to go so awry. When the monsters come for them, they are in the dark as to what to do. Their fear comes from the unknown of what animalistic evil is outside the door. They just know they have to survive. To quote famed psychiatrist Thomas Sawes, in the animal kingdom, the rule is eat or be eaten. In the human kingdom, define or be defined. The animal is the true horror here. It can't be reasoned with, and its bloodlust can't be clearly defined. Man is just man. Even Dahmer had his reasons and methods, thus making him susceptible to our laws, and eventually his own incarceration. When taking your next stroll through the woods or along a quiet stretch of road, remember, when you hear a rustle in the bushes, do you really fear being dragged away and eaten by a hobo? Or is it something more animal, something more primeval, hungry, and opportunistic, something you can't reason with, like your own fears of the unpredictability of nature? Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. A very compelling argument, to say the least. And now, to defend the film Ravenous, Mr. Jeremiah Johnson. Jeremiah, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. Good day or night to everyone listening, and of course to His Honor Judge Darren Ewing. And, of course, good evening to my colleague, Scott Baer. I'm sorry to say I didn't prepare any backhanded insults like Scott did. I was under the impression that this was a court of law, not a middle school playground. But, as stated by His Honor, I am here to defend the 1999 film Ravenous. Specifically, I'm here to demonstrate that humans earn the badge of fear when it comes to being consumed by another, not random beast, be they fiction or fact. Now, Scott brought to light pop culture cannibals like Hannibal Lecter. And in doing so, he actually begins to make my point. We have monsters in our society, serial killers, and they're considered the absolute scourge of humanity. Ted Bundy, John Wayne Gacy, the list goes on. But who do we consider the monsters of monsters? All it takes is the dash of cannibalism, and we get the Jeffrey Dahmers, the Albert Fishes. We give life to the Silence of the Lambs and the Texas Chainsaw Massacres. We do this because even when the media, when society brings us the darkest shade of gray in humanity, we can always shade them deeper with cannibalism. This is because cannibalism isn't a myth, like some Jim Henson monster reject like those found in Feast, but it's a shameful seed implanted in humans before society ever reared its head. It's a seed that we've shaped into like a more socially acceptable manner, of course, thanks to our entitlement, but at its core, it's in all of us. It's called survival. Now let's take a trip, all right? We're going to go camping or on a hike or snowshoeing. We're off to the forest for some peace of mind with some of our best friends. We love each other. We say day in and day out how we've got each other's backs. We'll throw down for the people we love. But something goes wrong. We get trapped in the woods. And we know there's no way out, at least for not for a long, long time, right? At first, of course, we'll stick to our guns and testify that we'll stick together through thick and thin. Of course, we didn't put nearly as much thought into the thin part. Into the part that creeps up on us as we find ourselves without the most basic of human needs, food. Incrementally, we devolve. Our survivalist instincts take over. You're thinking about eating your friends, and clearly, they're thinking about eating you. Now it becomes you against them. This hunger has pitted you against your loved ones and them against you. This isn't an arbitrary food chain fight where, like an apex predator, consumes its prey as nature intended. This is a psychological entropy on both sides. When you're being devoured by another human, be it your best friend or a seemingly sociopathic stranger, you're staring down the most monstrous type of being imaginable. You're not just facing a predator following the call of nature, no. You're being consumed by a being you understand that has been driven to the deep psychologically. Someone you could have called brother, lover, mom, or dad. Someone most certainly did call them that. Give me death at the hands of anything but my brother. Thank you.
Excellent arguments, both of you gentlemen. I'm going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and discuss the merits of both arguments. And again, I want to clarify, we're not in this court attempting to debate which is the better film between Ravenous or Feast. In my opinion, both are very fine films, but in fact, we are arguing which type of being eaten is more terrifying, and both of you gentlemen have made very compelling arguments. So I'm going to take a short break, and then we'll come back and discuss the merits of both of your arguments.
With only the opening arguments out of the way, Judge Ewing is already torn, requiring a break for deliberation. As we speak, he is likely battling inside his own mind, weighing the arguments for both sides of a case that may prove to be the most important case in all of the world's history.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm back from chambers, and I've been weighing heavily both of your compelling arguments, but I would like to open up the floor to further discussion and further argumentation about these films. And again, this is not a debate about which film is better or which film is worse. We are actually, in fact, and this is for the benefit of the jury, we are discussing what is more contributing to the element of horror inherent in these films. In this case, the theme is eating. Is it worse to be eaten by an alien, or is it worse to be eaten by your fellow man? So, that being said, let's just jump right in. Scott, if you'd like to begin, we can talk a little bit about the film Feast, give some people some background about it. I'm somewhat familiar with it. Scott, if you'd like to begin, and at any time, if you'd like to object or interject or whatever, I will allow a considerable amount of latitude before I make my decision.
All right. Thank you very much, Judge. I am here today to defend the movie Feast on the matter of what is the worst way to be eaten. My movie deals with creatures that may be alien or genetically altered or mythological, say chupacabra. And
did you make that up?
I'm reaching on that one, but only because your film has a Wendigo, and I felt it was only natural to then to keep the ground level and fair.
I was looking for the chupacabra reference, and I understand where the reference comes from. If you're reaching. Yeah, or I was gonna say like intelligent enough to know what the chupacabra is, but
well, usually it's the coyote dog hybrid with mange, but
which as I or maybe a Jim Henson monster character.
I don't believe there's ever been animals' weird cousin chupacabra.
Really? Okay, really? Like the mange animal. The animal cousin with me is like, we got to put him down now. Just like, oh shit, we got to put that fucking animal's cousin Mange down.
Yeah. That's his name, Mange.
Yeah, his name is just Mange. Like, we should have known something was wrong from day one.
It's time to play the music. I'm sorry.
It's time to put Mange down. Bam, bam, bam. And then it was the saddest day in Sesame Street history. But yeah, continue.
Yeah, so to defend the ambiguous creature that lies within the movie Feast. I should set the stage for the listener so they understand the film and its essence and its core. The movie Feast takes place in a rundown California desert bar called the Bear Tavern. The movie opens with a car crash and then shoots immediately to the bar. And once you get to the bar from that opening scene, the pace of the movie is pretty frenetic and never slows down.
Right.
I enjoyed that very much so, that it's a roller coaster ride of a movie.
Well, and they lay out the roller coaster ride. They actually like have like title cards.
They spell out the movie.
The second that opening scene ends, like it's just all about, I think it starts out with Bozo.
For the first 11 minutes and 45 seconds of the movie, it is very simply every character being introduced one by one with a splash title card and a little bit of information on their background to show you
like
who they are.
Like a baseball card with like statistics of their life expectancy. Mm-hmm. And then like a couple of like tidbits about them, like hobbies include wearing a tank top.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And when you hit the 11 minute and 45 second mark, and I wrote that down as a note for myself, because that's when you meet the last one of the characters that matters, and that's the hero. He bursts in on this scene of just regular folk hanging out in a bar. They've all got their problems. They've all got their
just
lives.
Just drinking a beer.
Drinking beers, drinking shots. And he bursts in covered in blood with a gun and basically starts barking orders. I want to actually, before we get too far into this, I want to actually throw early into this game, Exhibit A.
Oh, exhibits, okay.
Exhibit A in my case is going to be his audio from his first entry into the bar. When he walks in, he immediately starts giving orders and commands and lays out the dire situation in front of all these people who, for the first 12 minutes of the film, think everything's hunky-dory.
Well, they just were just having some, like, fried food and drinks, and everything's fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's take a moment to listen to Exhibit
A.
All
right, all right, Exhibit A.
Unless you people want to die, you'll do what I say, and you'll do it fast.
Mine's bigger than yours.
Listen to me. A storm of hell's coming down on this place any second. I don't know what they are. I don't know where they came from. All I do know is that these fuckers are fast, nasty, and hungry. And there's four of them. They got claws like Ginsu knives and more teeth than a chainsaw. They're coming. Right now. So we gotta lock this bar down. That means doors, windows, drains, and zippers, and we gotta do it fast.
Yeah, very compelling. And that was one of the elements of that film that I really, really loved. And this film was one of, I think it was the only successful and profitable element of Project Greenlight, which is a project that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon started to introduce new filmmakers. And the director, Mr. Gulager, is the son of Clue Gulager. And that's what I was excited about. I mean, you know, Henry Rollins is in there.
Yeah.
And, you know,
Judah Friedlander.
And a lot of other people that okay, fine. But I thought it was just really cool to have Clue Gulager in there, one of the great character actors of all time. And John Gulager really is a fascinating person, and doesn't at first seem like the type of person that could pull off a movie that comes out as bold as Feast does. And I love that first 10, 11 minutes of the film where they basically tell you what is going to happen to every character.
Oh, but yeah, with they're not always accurate.
Yeah, and the beautiful thing is, like, because half of them...
there are misdirections in there.
The vast majority are accurate, but the beautiful thing about for instance, the hero comes in, and, 20 seconds after the hero was introduced, maybe?
Life expectancy, pretty fucking
pretty
good.
Pretty fucking good. Yes. And then he says one more word, and he's dragged through and ripped to pieces.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is you're like, oh, wait, shit, who do I listen to?
And as I put in, my Exhibit A wasn't just thrown in there because of the awesome audio cue.
Yeah.
It's because this movie shows you that these creatures, they just don't care. As soon as he's introduced and he's in a moment of vulnerability with his back to door,
because
he gets snatched right up, his head is off in 1 second.
Every time you see one of these horror movies, you're like, man, like somebody else would have gotten killed there, but just because he's like the muscular hero, handsome, and he's like, he's saying something badass, like, doesn't mean he's in, like, he's not vulnerable, like, and all of a sudden he just gets tore through the door.
Exactly. And then from that point of the movie on, I mean, the entire movie, like I said, it's a very high, fast-paced action horror film. The entire rest of the movie can very easily be summarized as these people are stuck in this bar, they can't leave, and there's some form of animalistic monster outside, and it's more than one, it's actually a family, as they find out about 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
They're just trying to get in, and they're intelligent.
This is a fucking family. They're just banging all over the place,
and they're trying to get in. And throughout the entire movie, your expectations are not met for who you think's going to live and who you think's going to die.
And they do that right off the bat with that hero thing. They're like, "This is going to be awesome," and then boom, they kill it. And you're like, "Wait a minute! All those other cards you saw right up until then, because it was pretty much every card." Except for the heroine, which is his wife.
Well, you could even take the son. What was his name? Gosh, it's actually escaping me for the moment. Does anyone here know the name of the son? Cody? Yes, Cody. When Cody was introduced...
The director's son or the actor?
The
character.
The character Cody. It was Tuffy's son. Tuffy was the waitress who worked downstairs, upstairs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when Cody's introduced, he's the last one to be introduced before the hero, and his life expectancy is a wonderful, full life.
Right, yep.
He gets attacked almost immediately after the hero dies, And what happens is he doesn't die, and the mom runs over and says, "Never leave my side again. I'm going to stick with you forever," right. or something along those lines. Yeah. And immediately he's dead.
By the woman who also didn't have necessarily a high life expectancy, who becomes heroine number three, right?
Heroine number two?
Heroine number two.
Yeah, she becomes heroine number two.
The heroine number two, yeah. Right. So they mess you all up.
Yeah, they give you a little bit of a bait and switch with the opening title cards. And
yeah, there's misdirection in it, and it makes it even more exciting because you realize that John Gulager isn't playing by the rules, and that's I think a really wonderful element of a good horror film. That's what makes it fun.
But he starts out like telling you that he knows the rules by right. pretending that he knows the rules, being like, "Hey, it's a cripple. You're not going to kill the cripple, right?" And it's like, mm-hmm. "Oh, it's,
well,
you
they
know.
They don't."
But yeah, but that's actually like the one thing that they get right, right? Like the rest of it, you're just like, "Oh, okay, the hero is not the hero." All of a sudden, they get killed. I love it. Like, it's clear that they know the rules enough to break it.
Yeah,
but they right. also they throw it in your face, be like, "Yeah, we know the rules."
Yeah, this movie is self-aware on a great level and plays with irony like a master knitter, like creating just an irony blanket,
for me, it was From Dusk Till Dawn that worked.
Yes.
And I realize that that's never going to get me hired by one of my heroes and idols, Robert Rodriguez. I thought Feast works from beginning to end, whereas From Dusk Till Dawn is half a good movie and then half a complete piece of crap.
I haven't seen any of the sequels to Feast. Have you guys? So there's Feast 2 and 3.
No, but have they made sequels?
Two.
They're making 3, though.
No, they've already made 2 and 3.
Oh, good.
Oh, no, so they made 2 sequels. You see?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I knew that they said there were 3 total mm-hmm. movies, but because they obviously leave it at the end that there's going to be a sequel.
By the way, I read the synopses for the next 2.
Right.
And they actually revolve around Honey. Blonde, like, sex pot of the movie.
Wait,
the one who strips down to her underwear.
Oh, yeah.
And the one that, like, Honey runs pie. Away.
Yes.
Like, everybody's like, "She's gonna come back for us," and she fucking, like, bolts it.
Once again, irony and defeating, like, viewers' expectations.
Dude, I love that because I'm like, you know what? Maybe I would do that. Like, yeah. Given the opportunity, I'm like, because I was trying to put myself in that position, be like, would I back up to the door and wait for those weird fucking monsters to like, find me? No, like, maybe I would just be like, I'm in this big truck and I'm just gonna go. I'm gonna leave.
Yeah, and for anyone listening, as this story progresses and they're trapped in this bar and the monsters are attacking the outside, they come up with a variety of strategies to get out.
Right.
And they even get one of the creatures that penetrates their barriers and gets in and then actually penetrates a deer head on the wall. For one of the first comical moments that wasn't the freeze frame placard style.
Right.
Like a lot of stuff happened in that opening sequence.
There was a lot of monster banging.
Well, there was as you go, but like immediately the hero's head gets cut off. The Harley mom's leg gets cut off and she bleeds out. The bartender shoots his own foot. Jason Mewes, who is from Kevin Smith's films, he plays Jay from Jay and Silent Bob. He's Jay in Clerks,
he's hanging
Small
out, he's
Rats.
He's blasting in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, he's
who
just playing
gives
pool.
A rat's ass? Oh, I'm sorry.
And then they're like, what? Judah Friedlander, like, I love the fact
gets
that he
vomited on.
I think that, like, he was one of the first ones that got hurt, and he was one of the last ones that actually died.
Yeah,
like, he thought he was finally gonna die with his eye being torn out, and he's like, "No, how does it look?" And like, fucking Honey's looking at it, being like, "Oh no, it looks okay.
There's maggots
it's
coming
fine.
Out."
Yeah. Like, right. Does it look fine? It was comical. It was really good.
Yeah, but they continue throughout this entire movie trying to come up with different plans. And like we already touched upon, they send Honey out at one point to grab the truck to save them all. And she defies all expectations in horror movies by doing what a lot of people would normally do.
She makes it.
Honestly, that situation, you might
leaves.
Run. Yeah, you just might run. These monsters, these animals in my movie, Feast, are so terrifying that she's too afraid to follow the plan and even go back.
I want to bring this back to the judge because judges are supposed to be like,
Should this be an objection?
I'm just curious about this because as a judge, you are like pure of justice.
Yes.
As a judge,
that's me.
In that position, Judge Darren Ewing, Mm-hmm. What would you do in Honey's position? You are given the opportunity to back up to the door, most likely get killed by helping to save your three or four friends, or drive off in the semi and live to the sequel. Where would Judge Ewing go?
If I were that character?
Mm-hmm. If you were sexy Honey.
Well,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. That's what I mean. As a judge, you should be able to put yourself in the embody yourself in the position of that person.
Right. Well, I don't have a lot of personal...
Well, you find her guilty of murder, in other words. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I have never been in a position of being a sexy chick in peril. I have been in peril in some movies, but I've never been the honey pie type of role. And from a sequel standpoint, I feel like it would be best to save your own skin so that you could go on and do the sequels.
Yeah, because you're the sexy honey pie. You know you're going to get like cast immediately in the sequel, right?
So, yes, and she was. And I think she was great. And honestly, it's one of these outrageous situations that you can play hypothetical all you want, but I really think most people, when it came right down to it, if it came down to, am I going to see the sunlight? I think most people would bolt. I think most people would save themselves.
And I think that speaks volumes for my case. I think with this animalistic monster and the threat it poses, if it's that threatening that you would forsaken your coworkers and your friends, I think that you're helping me, Judge. I appreciate the...
You know, the other thing that I think is amazing is because I believe in my opening arguments I mentioned that survival... is actually the driving force between cannibalism and...
Objection, badgering.
Wait, you just made up the... It's like, no.
Overruled.
I'm saying you're making my case.
Because I'm intrigued by it.
My case is that I was making that exact case, is you will do anything to survive. Okay, in this case... she was giving up on her friends and running away.
Because those animals were so terrifying.
But in the same exact position on a mountaintop where those animals weren't there, but she had to survive by eating them, she would have done the same thing.
Well, if she had a truck, she could have just driven to food.
It was a Coors Light truck, actually. I noticed that it was a Coors Light truck.
If you're talking about cannibals and you have a truck, you just drive to a supermarket.
I would love that like sweet like Coors Light commercial with her like the train coming over, like and her like drinking the Coors Light, but then there's like human remains underneath her. Yeah.
Objection, wasting my airtime.
Okay. Upheld.
Thank you.
Sure.
And I would like to go back to Honey Pie's placard at the beginning of the movie when they freeze frame her.
Right. Honey Pie's placard. By the way, back in the 80s, I was in a band called Honey Pie's Placard.
Oh,
good
my God,
times.
Yes. What it was like, just like Ewok death scene?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. From now on, Horror in the Court. It doesn't have to happen, but I hope we come up with a really awesome band name every single time randomly.
I think that's
so far
we've
got a Honey Pie placard and Ewok death scene. I would fucking be in any of those bands.
Yes, amen, amen. Yeah. Sustained, upheld.
Perfect. Thank you, Jim.
Okay, I'm sorry, Scott. You were talking about Honey Pie.
You were talking about stupid things.
All right, you two.
Honey Pie's placard I really loved was dying to get out of town and life expectancy.
She may get her wish. I love that.
When she disappears.
That was while she was waiting on Henry Rollins, who was like the poor man's Tony Robbins or whatever.
Yes, he was. Which was kind of funny because Henry Rollins in this film was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And
I love Henry Rollins anyway in every shape and form. I'm sorry. His giant neck in freaking like
tattoos.
In music and in acting, he's awesome. He's really
Are you
cool.
a black Are you a fan of Black Flag?
Absolutely, yes. I am. Yeah.
I love Black Flag's bass player. I'm only vaguely familiar with their music, and they seem okay to me. But I love their bass player. Yeah. I can't remember her name, but she was fantastic.
Yeah, I just love that. Like, I don't listen to them like all the time compared to a lot of the other stuff I listen to. But like that dark, it was like the precursor to like punky, grungy type dark. I don't know. It was a good mix. I really liked it. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was a good front man.
I had a lot of respect for Rollins, so
Yeah, and I like the fact that in this movie he played a motivational speaker.
Yeah.
And in real life, he has done some of that work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's very meta.
He tours and does that. I want to go back because the one thing that both of these films have an element of is two actors who have made a career out of playing stoned guys, Jason Mewes,
right.
And then in Ravenous, it's David Arquette. And
I probably can't believe
I agreed to do this podcast because I am an actor and I do want to continue to be employed, but like both of these guys, I just can't fucking stand either of them. I don't think they're any good, and I think stoner characters are so boring and overplayed. And
I agree with that.
Dumb,
yeah.
And you know,
well, they're simple. It's
they're easy to play.
Yeah, it's too easy to write, and they're there to appeal to the stupid people in the audience. And I just hate stoner characters. I just hate them.
Oh yeah, me too. And like, and the thing is though, like, David Arquette, doesn't matter what movie he's in, he will always be Deputy Dewey from the fucking Scream franchise.
He's just the doofus
with the fucking goofy like derp. I accidentally married Courtney Cox. Like
yeah, and both of them look like they just put down a bong and stepped in front of the camera and whatever. Who cares? Who gives a rat's ass?
Perfect.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm not being very judgy right now.
Wait a minute, we got Kevin Smith on the line. He wants you to be in the next Jason Mewes movie.
Oh, please get Kevin Smith on the line. We've got something to talk about. Kevin, well, and I have to interject and just defend myself as a judge. I understand how ironic it is for me, you know, the worst actor in the world, to be saying these things, but you know what? I'm 47 and I love movies and I'm
say what you want, man.
Opinion, so so there you go. You know, Jason and David have both been successful and I wish them well, and
they're probably good people to hang out with, you know, like stoners are fun to hang out with.
They probably are. Yeah. They probably are. They seem like very nice guys, and you know, either one of them could just say, really? You don't like my acting? I've seen Troll 2, okay? You don't have a leg to stand on, so yeah. I'll just anyway.
But we can all have our own opinions, you know. Especially Judge Darren Ewing. You know? as the judge, you're allowed to have whatever fucking opinion you want.
Yeah, damn right.
And I'm actually really glad that you brought up Jason Mewes again and Henry Rollins, because this movie is packed with so many characters. And as we actually delve our way through it and as the movie progresses, we see them chop down right and left. Mm-hmm. And you and I were talking earlier, Jer, about how it defies expectations. Like, the one who's called the heroine, who's the hero's wife.
Yes. Yeah, which is, which is Navi Rawat or whatever, who was in one of my favorite really kind of shitty shows ever, but I loved it, was Numbers. I'm a math guy. I love math. So Numbers, if she was like the hot girl in Numbers.
There had to be one.
No, but she was like a hot math. Oh my God, I loved her. So she was in this, and I was like, oh, she's going to make it through the whole thing. No, she was heroine. She was like the hero's wife.
She was the hero's wife, and she was supposed to make it to get
her daughter.
She
was there 3/4 of the way through.
Oh, they made her very important, too. They even showed background. She had the only flashback.
Yeah.
She had the only flashback of any character in the movie, thus to make her that much more important. And then she just dies.
And like it was what Darren was saying about the director and the way that they were kind of going in all these different directions is like they were... it was kind of like a magician, kind of like putting your hand over here and all of a sudden something would happen over here. You're like, oh shit, I'm supposed to expect this. And then like, I don't know, like...
Exactly. When they went to the basement to get a corpse to rig as a bomb, as a distraction to get the vehicle where... Right. I think it was first the heroine and Honey Pie Henry Rollins were going to go out. But then eventually they changed the plan and Honey Pie went out later after that one failed. They grabbed that woman, Harley Mom, who had her leg chopped off.
Right.
And they thought she was dead, and they made a bomb out of her. And then just before they like were about to chuck her out the upstairs window, she's alive.
She's alive, but they do it anyway.
And then
they try to hide it and all this kind of...
That's just the pace of the movie that I love, is that, like, number one, they're going to use a body as a distraction, and that's a hard thing for these people. But then she's alive. Woo, wow, curveball. And then they're like, do it anyway. Well, one of them does. Yeah. The boss man says, do it anyway.
Yeah, but then they fight about it.
Then the chupacabra, I just did air quotes for the listeners, drags her out, which then ends up in the second sexual defiling scene as one of them basically, for lack of better English here, fucks her mouth. Well, they're trying to detonate the bomb.
Hey. Objection! Hey.
Objection! Hey. Objection! Maybe Wait children it. Listening. What about that monster cock slammed in the door?
Oh, yeah, man. And there was the monster cock slammed in the door. Yeah,
that was the only part that I thought was a cheap laugh, and I thought it was kind of infantile and stupid. That was the only part of the movie.
It was, but I have to say, I laughed like an infant, and I was like, and I was like, wait a minute, okay. I don't know. Well, it started squiggling around.
And it went underneath the guy in the wheelchair, and he couldn't wheel off of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, okay, this is gonna. And then they smashed it with like a bug, and I was like, well, okay, this got a little bit.
Well, I mean, if you thought that was too infantile, what about that earlier scene we talked about where it starts humping the mouth of the deer on the wall?
The deer head.
Yeah, the deer head on the wall.
It's just nature, man.
That's nature?
You clearly watched my unrated.
I did.
Yes, I watched unrated as well.
Yeah. We watched the deer humping version of it, yeah.
Now it's a deer humping.
Now with deer humping.
The deer humper.
New and improved. if you watched the Project Greenlight show when they were doing this, one of the biggest fights and one of the biggest bones of contention during the casting of the film was John Gielgud's girlfriend Navi being in the film.
They were actually together during the
The producers and all of the people said, no, we can get a name actress in there, we can get somebody else. And that is the fight that John fought, and he was told time and time again, look, this is your first film, this is your chance, you know, pick your battles. And he said, look, if Navi isn't in it, then I'm not going to do it. And it was that was sort of the dramatic crux of the film. Long story short, I think he was right. I think she was the right choice for that role.
She's got the attitude. She's got she came blasting through right after her quote unquote husband, the hero, fucking got hit and got killed, and it was awesome.
She was absolutely great in the role.
Yeah, and she did. Yeah. She's just. I really like her as an actress anyway.
And then and the other point is the creature effects people just knocked it out of the park.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's one part where you see them, they've got like horns and stuff like that, but then you see like the kids, like the babies or whatever.
Yeah. The adults are actually wearing clothes. Yeah, they're wearing animal skins and animal skulls.
And then one of them just rips everything apart and there's the real freaking like gnawing teeth out of it.
That horrifying monster, that thing that you would be really afraid to be eaten by.
Only I wouldn't be because it was a little Jim Henson-y.
I thought you just said it was amazing.
I mean, amazing if it like came out of like
the crystal.
If it was like the B-roll of the labyrinth. It'd be great.
Objection, but. Backpedaling.
Okay. All right. Sustained, and only because I think we've talked about that film enough. I think it's time to move on to the 1999 film Ravenous. If that suits you two gentlemen. I mean, I'm the judge, so I can make that.
That's fine. I had an exhibit C that was actually a list
I'll allow it. Go ahead, Scott.
It was a list of bear attacks in the world from Wikipedia.
Because bear attacks from Wikipedia is worth. Oh yeah, yeah. I'll allow it. That's fine.
I'm beginning to regret this.
You know, here's the thing is I'm gonna this is going. I'm holding this in the back of my mind. By the way, Darren. Now he can toss out just like a random bear attack list from Wikipedia. I'm gonna be able to just like fart for 20 minutes. And he's gonna be like, all right, yeah, Exhibit D, in just like 20 minutes.
Now I only bring this to the light of the court to further flesh out my drive here to the show.
Keep going. Keep trying.
The animals are scarier than humans.
Oh, okay.
Period.
Yeah,
they are ravenous killing machines that want to eat your flesh.
Because I remember the last time I was eaten by a bear.
Bears.
Mm.
In 2014 alone, we have one, two. I'm just gonna go for them.
You're really gonna go along with this, huh?
Well, you will allow it, apparently.
I will allow it.
Here, the most recent example.
Watch your mouth when you say sustained from now on.
Yes,
the
I
most
will.
Recent yeah. example was in September 21st of 2014. In New Jersey.
That was not
and
that long
this
ago.
This hits pretty close to home.
Chris both, Christie ate a bear.
Both locally yeah. and temporally.
Okay, yeah.
Patel was hiking with four friends in a preserve when a bear started following them. The hikers ran in different directions and found that Patel was missing when they had regrouped. Authorities found Patel's body after searching for 2 hours. A black bear was found in the vicinity and was euthanized. The bear was responsible for the attack ultimately. I close my case.
Because a bear killed a guy one time.
Okay, so...
Beast wins.
We're talking about aliens eating people, and you're going to close with
and
a bear.
And there's a guy,
attack.
Like a bear in New Jersey, maybe okay. ate a guy once.
As I said, animals are scary.
Yes.
Jeremiah, as we move on, Scott has just teed you up beautifully. So let's talk a little bit about the 1999 film Ravenous, which is this is a film that I recommended. 1999 was an amazing year for film. And especially horror films. The Blair Witch Project came out that year. Being John Malkovich, a lot of really strange, groundbreaking films came out in 1999. That I love, American Beauty and Fight Club. And Ravenous is one of those films that it didn't get a lot of traction. It has a stellar cast. It is about cannibalism. It played at Sundance. I remember a lot of people were talking about it. So I'll open up the floor to discussion about the film Ravenous.
Yeah. First of all, I should say that there are no bears randomly making an appearance. Randomly doing, yeah.
But what do you think? So it's
like,
in the,
hey,
it's
in the forest. This is the
it does take place in the woods.
Yeah,
I know. Of all the places,
where bear shit.
Right. Where? Like,
I have no idea why. How else your argument didn't have something to do like my movie? Like maybe like in the actual woods, a bear was there fucking killing people.
I'm allowed to bring into court evidence that I feel is
irrelevant.
Oh my.
Okay. So the Ravenous is about actual cannibalism. It's not just about like animals eating, you know, people they want to eat or whatever. It takes place during the Mexican-American War. Guy Pearce is in it. I really like Guy Pearce. Actually, I really like Robert Carlyle. Awesome. Very good. Yeah. Those are two of the main characters. I won't give.
Jeremiah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm just going to interject, and I'm going to name drop a little bit because this film features some of my favorite character actors, one of whom I've actually worked with. I think Guy Pearce and Robert Carlyle are two of the best in their profession. And
agreed.
Most people
they just look cool.
Yeah, you say their names, and most people don't have a clue who they are, but. They, at any time, I think these guys could have sold out and gone, you know, and done Mission Impossible. And I know Robert Carlyle did, he played a Bond villain at one point, but they are just really, really tremendously talented character actors. And also David Arquette's in it, and he sucks. Anyway, the other guy who I wanted to mention is Neil McDonough, who... he's the guy that I've worked with. I worked with him in a film called American Gothic, and Neil McDonough is who I want to be when I grow up. He is the coolest guy I've ever met, and one of the most professional actors. And most people don't have a clue who he is. He's got these piercing blue eyes and blonde hair and a really commanding presence.
Sounds like Guy Pearce.
Yeah, yeah. How he isn't like Matt Damon or George Clooney, how he isn't a household name is beyond me, because he's absolutely brilliant, and he's a really cool guy, and he's a great guy to work with. So anyway, sorry. That's my name dropping.
So who did he play in this?
He played Private Reich. The most famous scene is where he's toughening himself up by standing completely naked in a freezing cold river.
Blonde, and he's
yes,
guy.
Yes. Ah, oh my
he's just
god!
Yelling, yeah.
And oh
he's,
my god! He's, that guy is one
he's
of my,
intense.
He was awesome. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was one of my favorites in this movie.
And he's a joy to work with. He is super cool. So it's got a very good cast. And then it Jeffrey Jones is in it from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And so it's some really good actors in this film.
Yeah, and really what it did, like, Guy Pearce, through his character, which is his last name, Boyd, he's an officer in the Army of the Republic of Texas, which they eventually merged with, like, the United States Army. And at one point, he loses his courage during a battle, and he plays dead, which is actually a really creepy scene.
That was one of the better scenes in the movie for me, was that...
Because,
that,
remember, like, yeah. he, they show him, like... shutting his eyes and playing dead to be like
in a pile of bodies.
Yeah, and his commanding officer is above him, and his blood is bleeding into his mouth.
Yeah,
and he's actually you can understand, like, I can only imagine how far they were dragging him with that guy's blood dripping in his mouth, and he was just like there the whole time, so kind of like a coward at that point. But of course, then his
does that make him a cannibal? He was ingesting another man's blood.
Not yet.
does it make him a bear? I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
I feel like I've lost already.
Yeah, because you just randomly were like, hey, how about bears?
on Wikipedia.
You didn't even need to. Like, you could have let me go first and be like, hey, remember those bears that one time? Who likes Fozzie? Waka waka. Like, come on, man.
I think we know what the next
court... The more we talk about bears, the less time you have to argue.
I think the next court case that we're gonna have to hear, we're gonna have to have like Prophecy and any other bear-related film and discuss the merits of that type of horror film.
It might have to happen.
I think Prophecy is the only bear-driven horror film, well, that I know of.
Well, you know, the funny thing is I actually had Prophecy on one of my lists anyway.
As a future movie.
I don't know what to pair it with, but I had it like on one of the future movies.
It's so great fun to watch. Prophecy is just great
Walken,
fun.
Right?
You mean the Walken Prophecy, right?
Yeah, and it's got Talia Shire, and it's just great fun.
Because I actually had paired like a
it's
bunch
hilarious.
Of
hilarious.
I had paired like a bunch of Christopher Walken movies together, but we could actually go a different route, which would be bears, which would be
just
great.
Keep eating into your time.
Here's the thing, Scott is right.
Jeremiah,
I don't need my time because you already fucked it up with bears.
Objection. What's he doing?
Winning by not talking because you screwed it up with bears. Okay, here's the thing. All right, let me just give you a little background on the movie for anybody.
They're the
who
chupacabras of the north.
You made that up.
Another good band name. I think we've got something here.
Oh man, we're rolling, man.
We got three of them now.
Jeez, man. All right, we could actually create more bands than we have podcasts by the time we're done. Yeah. So Guy Pearce's character Boyd, he's a coward, right? So he goes up to. Here's the thing. What was that? Like, thumbs up?
I just figured out that I won. Keep talking. We'll get to the end.
How did you figure out you won?
I have an ace up my sleeve. And I just thought of it.
You really, like, tipped your hand on that one. I'm sorry. It's like somebody getting pocket aces and going like this before they bet. Because now I'm wondering, I don't know. Fine. I'll keep going with that.
Sure. Keep going.
So, okay, Boyd, he goes back to his commanding officers and is like, all right, I was actually, I ended up actually, fucking things up, and I'm kind of a coward. So the guy's like, all right, well, we're going to send you to Fort Spencer. And they send him to Fort Spencer. He gets in there with a bunch of other people, and eventually a stranger comes in. It's like, hey, man, I was in a wagon train, and a bunch of people turned into candles, blah, 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 blah. And they went to a... They bring him to a cave, right? You're just... I can't help but look at this guy just like laughing at me.
I'm just doing.
So he goes to a cave and Robert Carlyle's character is this stranger, and it turns out it's a trap, right? So they take everybody, like, and they kill everybody except for Guy Pearce's character, Boyd. Guy Pearce's character, Boyd, like, breaks his leg, has to, you know, wallow in the wilderness for a while, ends up eating a little bit of his friend's skin, you know, and, you know, becomes a little bit of a cannibal. And in this time, they actually determine that this stranger is actually a cannibal. He's killed five or six people and eaten all their flesh and all this kind of stuff. Finally, by the time Boyd comes to the fort again, Fort Spencer, none of the people that he was there with before, like, are there because they're all either dead or they were with him or whatever. So there's a new commanding officer that he meets him. He's introduced.
You did just say the hero of the story becomes a little bit of a cannibal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Judge, that's, you do not.
That's
you
true.
Do not, yeah.
So, yeah, just saying that the hero of your movie is a little bit cannibal. That's cool. That's cool.
Keep going. How does that have anything to do with anything?
I'm just throwing that out. I want to make sure the judge was aware of that.
Really, because I believe in my intro...
Because no one was afraid of him.
No, because in my introductory statement, I was actually mentioning the thing that is most fearful about cannibalism is the fact that you could actually become one yourself, and that actually it pits you against your best friend.
Okay.
That you don't know when it happens.
I'm just being snarky. Keep going.
Yeah. No, that's fine. It's great. Because you just tipped your hand a little bit, so...
Oh, no, I haven't.
I love, at the end, it's just going to be us, like, punching each other in front of the microphone. It's like 10 minutes of us, like, bashing each other.
Gentlemen, you're both pretty. Continue.
I'm just giving a synopsis of the movie.
Please, right? Continue.
So, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, like, Boyd goes back to this Fort Spencer. Ives is there. That's his name now. And turns out he's actually the cannibal, and he kind of, like, he tries to get Boyd on his side to be like, hey, man, want to be cannibals together? We can do this. And Boyd, of course, is a very good human being, and
he's the good guy.
He's the good guy, and he
and a cannibal
goes against every bit of that, right?
Well, yeah. Except for when he ate something earlier.
Yeah, but then he kills the bad guy. Oh, not only does he kill the bad guy, he actually turns one of the other bad guys against himself.
Yes,
you
does.
Remember that? There's actually one point where the bad guy
suicide, doesn't he?
Where the bad guy is like, hey. Kill me right now because I don't want to live this life anymore.
But doesn't he end up killing himself?
Who?
The other general guy who...
General Hart, I think?
Yeah, I forget his name. I'm sorry.
No, he tells him to kill him. He's like, he lets him go. He actually unchains Boyd and says, okay, you can go ahead and do this. He's like, but kill me first. And he slices his neck. He bleeds all over the window. And that's when Ives is looking in it.
Sees it, yeah.
And that's when the fucking final...
I actually really like that moment. There's just the blood hitting the window. Something about it was very chilling.
And it's just him looking at it and staring at it. Yeah. And then it becomes...
It was like recognition.
And then it becomes like a snuggle scene. They just snuggle for a while. And then... I mean, they snuggle until they get killed by a bear trap.
Yes. What trap?
Wait.
What trap?
What kind of trap is it?
Yeah, what kind of trap? Could you say
oh
that again?
Oh my god, did I just lose?
I told you this would come back around.
You know what? If that's what loses it for me, it's fucking worth it because that is absolutely beautiful. It came. I didn't even realize that's where it was going.
I made a point of working this all the way around into a circle.
Was it a human trap?
It was not a human trap.
What say you,
was it,
Mr.
Was it
Ewing?
An alien trap? No, but it was a bear trap.
No, it was a bear trap.
The only device capable of nixing this cannibal and removing him from the world is the same device used to remove more vicious creatures. So much so, they mass produce bear traps. They don't mass produce cannibal traps.
Well, no
they mass produce bear traps.
I was never saying there's no such thing as a human trap. That's not our argument.
I feel like I've won.
I wish one of us was actually like a real lawyer in a courtroom arguing like the most important case in history. Like, I feel like whatever it is I said was great.
I wish I was a real judge because I don't know what I'm doing. I just think it's funny as hell. That's all.
I don't know. I mean, that's all I got, man. Come on.
I would like to point out that your movie, Ravidus,
right,
was scored by Damon Albarn. And Damon Albarn is actually my favorite musician. A lot of people may not know him by name, but he was the front man for Blur and the front man for Gorillaz, and he's a solo artist.
Are you kidding
as well.
Me? I did not.
Is that really the same one, though? Did you check that out?
I did.
Because I saw the name, but that doesn't. I didn't assume.
If you look in my bookmarks right under Wiki Bears, I have Damon Albarn's wiki.
You've got the weirdest wiki.
Yeah.
But yes, Damon Albarn is one of my favorite musicians, and yes, he was a fan of Blur
and Gorillaz.
I don't
know, I love
Gorillaz.
Him too. That's great. I didn't realize it was the same name.
And I gotta say, like, the opening score, when it first started, was very periody and very awesome, but when you got to, like, say, the chase scene right after they did the big discovery at the cave...
I laughed my ass off.
Yeah, so did I. That's not what I was looking for in a movie that was supposed to scare
me. It was like somebody
me.
With an accordion being like... Bang, 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 and then it was. Like
it was
upbeat, a cannibal through the woods.
It was upbeat synthy music as two soldiers, essentially, are chasing a cannibal.
Right.
It didn't evoke the emotion that was necessary for that scene to be driving. At all. And I love that musician.
But the thing is, though, that's what I love about it. I actually really love the score.
Well, that was the problem. Is when I watched that movie, I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be camp or serious.
And you know the funny thing?
I had a hard time walking that line.
When I read on...
It's a very strange tone, I will admit, in the film. Feast just comes right out, and you automatically know the tone. Ravenous works, though, but I think Ravenous works the way a lot of really good horror films do, where it just... puts you into an uncomfortable place where you're just not quite sure whose hands you're in or what's going to happen.
That's what I loved about the wacky music. I was like, man, like, this is creepy. They're chasing and being chased, and like, and it's this wacky, like, little, like, boom-bop, boom-bop, like, oompa kind of music, like, hey, everybody, let's have a good time. And it's like, no, we're chasing after a psychopath here, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would also defend Jeremiah only in the sense that I don't know of many horror films where the hero doesn't do morally questionable things. That's just my observation. I can't think of very many classic horror films where the hero is not pushed up against a wall and has to make moral decisions that aren't always accurate.
Well, and the thing I liked about Ravenous is, like, he was given the opportunity to become the demon that we're talking about, mm-hmm. but at the same time, like, you understand, like, what I was arguing in my argument, the mm-hmm. introductory argument, is that the things that's terrifying about human cannibalism, you know, actually us eating one another, is the fact that we all have it in us, in that survival instinct. Will you give it to just that survival instinct? Or will, in the case of, like, Colonel Ives, which is Robert Carlyle's character, will you let the Wendigo possesses you and you become the demon, you become, that's who you become. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a terrifying thing right there.
We are the monster.
Yeah, well, like, it's in us. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. The survival instinct is within us, and that's the scary thing, is knowing that when you're there with your friend, your best friend, whatever, given the opportunity, because he was there with his commanding officer Hart, you know, and all these other people, and he eventually became a cannibal because of that as well. Like, he understood that you could get the power by eating the flesh of somebody else, and he actually turned, of course, Hart against that will, and then slices throat. But it's terrifying to know that it doesn't matter. Like, if you're in that survival atmosphere, your best friend, your mom, your dad, they could turn against you,
and still retain some level of consciousness. So wherein Hart realizes it's wrong, he's then compelled by his
thing.
Own soul mm-hmm. to
that's,
say, end me.
That's the terrifying
no,
thing.
No wolf is ever, no bear is ever going to leap upon you and say, I don't want to do this, kill me.
No, but here's the thing.
They have one instinct. It's to eat
you. But if you think about
it's
like
to satiate their animalistic
but
needs.
Let's say, like, as human beings, when we kill a deer or something like that, the Native American culture, when we kill a deer, And we actually thank the deer for giving its life for our, like, food, you know? And when you're actually in the human element of that, you are so psychologically drained to the point where you're actually, like, and again, when you're being eaten by somebody, you're staring yourself in the face, and you understand what they're going through at that point. That's what's terrifying. That's why that's so scary. If I was just getting eaten by a wolf, I'd be like, I don't know what you're thinking. If I'm looking at somebody in the face, I'll be like, man, I hate that I know what you're thinking right now, and it is killing you, and it's killing
me. My fear comes from lack of hope. You can hope a person will realize what he's doing is wrong. You can't hope an animal will.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. It's all up to Judge.
Yeah. Mm. I believe... Are we done our statements?
I believe so, yeah. I'm going to go head into chambers, and I will be back with my judgment in just a few minutes, gentlemen.
Who will Judge Darren find for? The man-eating beasts of feast who live only to devour humankind? Or the man-eating men of Ravenous, whose sense of right and wrong have been devoured by the beast of survival? Judge Ewing is once again faced with a remarkably difficult decision, the ethics of mankind and justice on the line.
Well, gentlemen, I must say that these are two compelling arguments. This was a decision that I did not come to easily. So before I give my final judgment, I'd just like to mention that I am in the Hallmark film Christmas Under Wraps, which premieres this Saturday on the Hallmark Channel. I play the seminal role of an orderly named Lester, so please tune in for that, and I will be plugging, I've been in 4 Christmas movies and several other horror films that I will shamelessly plug throughout the Christmas season. So please tune in for that. It features Brian Doyle Murray, Bill's big brother. I was totally starstruck when I got to work with him. And it also features Christmas Under Wraps, also features Candace Cameron Bure, who is from an 80s TV show called Full House. I never watched it. But Candace was just adorable to work with, and she's probably like 3 feet tall. So I towered over her. Anyway, now that I've got all of my shameless plugs out of the way, some really compelling arguments here. And I think they're very good films. They're very different films. So if I have to weigh the decision of what is more terrifying, to be eaten by a Koopa Chabra, what is that called, Scott?
Chupacabra.
Chupacabra, yeah. Which I do think most people are familiar with and can probably pronounce a lot better than I just did.
I saw it on X-Files, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's where I remember seeing one. Or being eaten by your fellow man, which is more terrifying? It was a very, very difficult decision because being eaten alive is one of my many phobias, so it really doesn't matter who or what is doing the eating. I find just being eaten in general absolutely terrifying. It's why I'm still afraid of the ocean, because I saw Jaws when I was a kid, and I'm just terrified of being eaten alive by anything. So I am going to rule in favor of Scott Bear, only because that bear thing was just too damn funny. it was a hilarious distraction, and then Jeremiah mentioned that the guy in Ravenous gets caught in a bear trap.
Both of them, they snuggle and die in a bear trap together.
So it just terrible. It goes to show you how kind of arbitrary my judgments are, because
it wasn't too arbitrary. You saw the second I saw the glimmer in your eye, Scott.
I made all the connections ahead of time.
Oh my god, I knew it. Yeah.
It was too funny. One minute we're talking about aliens and cannibals, and then a bear.
From Wikipedia, Wikipedia bear pops up.
By the way, I love bears. I am not at all afraid of bears. No. And if I got to choose how I died, being mauled by a bear would not be half bad, in my opinion.
Because I
love bears, so
they're cute until the last second.
Yeah.
They're cute until they're dragging you off into the woods. That is my judgment, and I, hope.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're 1-1. We're fine. We're going to beat each other up in the parking lot.
That's right. That's true. You're 1-1, and so until the next horror in the court, this is my ruling. There. So there. Suck it.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Judge. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That concludes this month's Horror in the Court. Tune in next month for a battle of Christmas spirit as Silent Night Deadly Night faces off against Jack Frost to determine which film succeeds in tainting the memory of beloved holiday characters more.